This is Ana Ojes Castro Guzan, co-founder of Your Words STL, and you're listening to the Gift of Words podcast mini-series. Your Words STL is a 501c3 nonprofit that uses tutoring, creative writing workshops, and collaborative projects to help amplify the voices of marginalized youth. We are committed to bridging racial, cultural, and socioeconomic divides by honing the ability of people to tell their stories while providing opportunities for the community to listen. This podcast is hosted by Michelle Haberberger, Development Manager of Your Words STL.
This interview is part of our hashtag Gift of Words Giving Tuesday campaign and lecture series. We're interviewing experts in fields closely tied to the mission and vision of Yours STL. And I am very excited to welcome our guest for today, Arsenia Tate.
Hi, hello everyone.
Thank you so much for joining us. Would you mind telling us a little bit about who you are and what is your connection to YWSTL?
Yes. So again, my name is Arsenia Tate. I'm a St. Louis native, wife and mom of two. I currently work at St. Margaret of Scotland as the mindfulness teacher and coordinator of diversity, inclusion, and equity. I came across YWSTL and met the co-founder of the program, Ana Guzan, through a fellowship called EdHub STL. And this was in 2019. EdHub was founded by Sharita Love. It's an extension of Venture Cafe St. Louis, and the purpose of the fellowship is just to develop or expand transformative education initiatives or programs. And so Ana and I were both in the same cohort, and so we've listened to, advised, and learned along one another over the past year or so, and Ana reached out to me to be a facilitator for the Crossing Delmore project, and so that's how I'm connected.
So it sounds like you guys have really bonded through the experience of crafting something that you believe is going to be meaningful together. So what was that like for you to be like working on your own project while also kind of being a thought partner to someone else with their own project?
Yeah, it was really great. I felt like because we already had a connection that it made the work more meaningful. Like I knew exactly what things she wanted to talk about, like deeper than someone just sending me like a list of goals or objectives. So I think our relationship played a big role into me. Like I could deep dive and see, like try to put out her vision. Yeah. And also I think she asked me to write the curriculum for Crossing Delmar. And I think that, I don't know, it just made me even invest myself more.
So we've talked about Crossing Delmar a little bit on other episodes. One of the things we keep hearing is how like Crossing Delmar is all about bringing, you know, kids from opposite sides of this divide together. But you're the first person in this little mini series that we've talked to who's like directly involved in writing the curriculum. So would you mind talking about what is Crossing Delmar and what does it mean to write lessons this heavy for kids?
Yeah. So, Crossing Delmar was, there are two schools that were put together. So Moline Acres and New City. The days that Ana wanted me to come was to specifically talk about race. We talked about stereotypes, even social constructs, because I feel like before you can dive into what is race and racism, you got to get kids to understand this idea of a social construct and being able to identify it. And then I felt like it really started opening up other things and kids were able to name different social constructs other than race. They talked about beauty standards, like who do we consider beautiful? A social construct of school, like what different types of school are there? You know, even looking at their own, like public or private. magnet schools, just all different kind of things. And the goal of the first day was to kind of get them to understand the definition of race and racism, and but also like create their own. So by the end of the day, students created their own definition by writing it as an equation. So like this plus this would equal racism. So that was pretty cool to see.
So it sounds like it's not a matter of like teaching what is racism to kids. It's instead giving them the language for the experiences that they already know.
Yes, definitely. I always love to deal with shared language, because there's been so many times, and you can probably think about your own personal experience, that where you think you're on the same page with someone and you assume that you have the shared language, and you realize you have a total different understanding of this word. So I think shared language is really, really crucial.
It's almost like giving to the words to those experiences in order to create even deeper connections around the similarities of those experiences.
Yes.
So what made you decide on an equation? I feel like, you know, when you think about definitions, they don't often come with a plus and equals. So is that something that you use with adults? Is it something specific to kiddos? Why that format?
I was in a training last year with Crossroads. In this training, they introduced the definition of racism kind of like as an equation, like this plus this is racism. And they defined it as like privilege and power. And so I thought that was like really creative. I don't know. I felt like it would be something kids could connect to better rather than just giving them like this long sentence.
And have kids been able to connect to it? Are you seeing that they are capable of grasping it this way?
Yes, I really think so. And I've also used it equations and also like I call it a six word essay. And I've seen that in another training as well, where you just write six words that define what racism is. Because some math draws attention to some people because they love it. Or, you know, if you love poetry and reading and things like that, that six word essay may appeal to you more. But I've used both of those.
What are the six words to define racism?
If I had to come up with my own, oh my goodness.
Oh, okay. So the participants have to come up with their own. Okay. Okay. Got it. You're like, don't put me on the spot. Don't put me on the spot. Not that you wouldn't be qualified to do it. You have a really interesting job title at St. Margaret of Scotland School. Tell us about your role.
Okay. So my role or my title is Coordinator of Diversity, Inclusion, and Equity. And so this role, I would say it was first imagined about 4 or 5 years ago. I could be totally wrong with this timeline, but I believe it first started off as St. Margaret parents just volunteering to teach lessons like during Black History Month so that students could go beyond learning just about like Rosa Parks, Frederick Douglass, and Martin Luther King. And then after that, parents formed like a subcommittee of the PTA, and it was focused on diversity and inclusion. And so, as you know, with volunteers, sometimes it's not sustainable. That committee did make progress, but after a while, you kind of realize, like, I have a full-time job. We need something that's more sustainable and a dedicated role or person to help our school, you know, become educated about, you know, social justice issues. So later, an opportunity came to apply for a grant through the Roman Catholic Foundation. And so there was a lot of hard work and research on what diversity inclusion would actually look like in a Catholic elementary school. So we end up in 2018 receiving that grant from the Roman Catholic Foundation, which allowed for my role to be created. And I got to kind of make it my own. I saw diversity, inclusion, and equity as not only just teaching about racial injustice, but also the way kids learn the things that are being taught in curriculum. My first year, I would say a lot of freedom to kind of, you know, just see like exactly what I wanted this role to be. And this is also like the first role like this in a elementary level. I mean, it's fun. I'm realizing the kids do not have like this fear that adults have about race and racism. We always talk about creating brave space and being transparent. So great conversations come up in class.
Even though it's not common to have someone in your role in an elementary school, it almost sounds like you're saying, like, these kids are ready for it. Let's do it.
Yeah, definitely. I said, language is kind of my thing. I realized that, like, in this role, I just read so much and I have learned so much over these past 3 years. And I'm like, wow, I thought I knew this. And there's so much more out there. And so one of the goals of mine, I've created like the stair step of language. So it starts, our school is pre-K through eighth grade. We start with really easy terms in preschool. And for example, instead of saying friend, let's use the word ally. And let's use some books to introduce these terms. And then by eighth grade, you know, every year, because it's like a stair step. So every year you're gaining more knowledge of language and terms. And by eighth grade, you leave here with language that probably most adults, you know, don't even have.
So what do these kiddos like do with this, right? Like, do you, what's the support looking like from your families, from your broader school community? Are those conversations continuing at home?
Yes, they are. I would say that this school community is really, really supportive. And I made sure that it's not good enough to only reach our students, but I wanted to include families and also teachers. So with students, they get this language, they get mindfulness lessons and, you know, learn about race and racism. And then for families, I'll have events like dinner and dialogues. And I would invite the Anti-Defamation League to facilitate a session. And so it's open to church members and also, you know, families. And in a separate room, you know, the kids may be learning a lesson that, you know, is in line with the adult conversation. And so with teachers, also like just taking a look at their curriculum, like whose voices and stories are being shared. So it's kind of like hitting everyone. So like we're all on the same page. We're all growing together.
Yeah. So you kind of mentioned this briefly, but I'd love for you to talk a little bit more about it. You said that sometimes it's even easier to do this kind of work, to have these conversations with kiddos than adults. So if we're at one of these events where you've got the adults in one room and the kiddos in another room, how do you do that differently? Like, other than obviously you can, you know, get a little more complex with the grown people, what's the process of getting them to that almost place of vulnerability and openness that's so natural in children?
Some things that I think have worked, just always telling my own story, my own mess ups. So I started mindfulness off with, and I incorporate diversity and inclusion conversations within mindfulness class. So I might start the year off with, there's a book called The Girl Who Never Made Any Mistakes. And then I start telling all these things. And because my name is Mrs. Tate, you know, it's close to the word mistake. And so I have like some of the letters covered up and I pull them off and the kids see at the end of this story, like it's really me. I think just allowing them to connect to like real life stories and me being vulnerable makes them even more vulnerable. I'm just always willing to put myself on the line. And I think that makes kids comfortable. Like, wow, Miss Tate was honest about a mistake she made, or, you know, like things. I don't know. Adults are kind of more reserved when it comes to, you know, talking about racism and things like that. And I'm just finding kids, I don't know, they just are more willing to be vulnerable. And I think it's just the nature of children as well. I'm thinking of like a time where I did a lesson and I stood in front of the class and I was like, what do you guys notice about me? And you know, they were naming all kind of things like, you're short, your hair is this color, your eyes are this color. But I noticed at first, no one would say, like, Miss Tate is Black. And I just encouraged them. I introduced this term, you know, being color brave. it's not rude to say, I see that your skin color is brown. Just even little things like that.
Is that difficult for you in any way? As the adult facilitator, it sounds like mm-hmm. you're saying both with kids and grown people, you have to start from that place of vulnerability. Like what drives you to go to that place? And is that ever difficult?
I would say with children, it's not difficult. With adults, I think it is. Things are more meaningful to me, like personally, when I can find a connection to it. So I love like reading books and watching movies just about people in their lives. Like I always want to know like what happened, how did they get there? You know, what things did they overcome? Always kind of willing to like start with me because I think it speaks to the heart. I think a lot of times when we think about, or even when slavery or things like that are taught in school, in students' minds, something that happened way, way long ago, you want to humanize the experience because I think that opens people up just in general.
Yeah, that definitely makes sense. Very, very cool. Powerful stuff, man. Like, don't you get tired going into work every day? Like, this is like the energy that you bring every day to this role.
Yes. I have had times where I'm like exhausted. I would say last year was probably my most difficult year in this role.
Why? You don't have to get too personal, obviously, but like, like what? You say last year, and most people are like, man, I wish it was 2019 again. Like, was it more difficult than 2020? Like, considering all the challenges that we are facing as a city and as a nation and as a world in 2020, what made 2019 challenging, and how does that contrast with the kind of the new reality we're all dealing with in 2020?
Mm-hmm. I would say maybe personally, because like the trainings and things I was going to, I'm like, my mind just opened up to like, oh, wow, I see the ways that I've been perpetuating, you know, racism, and I need to fix this. Mm-hmm. I always think of how in this role, I think a lot of people, it's very lonely, one, being a coordinator of diversity, inclusion, and equity, but also you're so like afraid, you don't want to offend people. You want them to be as open as you are and things like that. And sometimes people have the mindset of, maybe she's going to call me out as being racist. So I think there's like this fear there from people. And then for me, I'm like, okay, how far do I push? You know, things like that.
How far do you push?
Sometimes I just go there.
Yeah.
Over the summer, because you talked about like 2019 versus 2020. I think, you know, with the death of George Floyd, I feel like it just opened the world's eyes, like we can no longer ignore some of these issues that we've been dealing with for years and years. And there was like, with that video, there was no question mm-hmm. about what happened. Like you couldn't deny anything. And it's like, why did it take, you know, this man's death for people's eyes to be open?
That level of brutality almost. Yes, like,
yes, what? Yeah. And I would say what also kind of like makes this year easier, because over the summer I offered anti-bias, anti-racism summer class for the staff. And so we read through this book by Tiffany Jewell called This Book is Anti-Racist. You know, there were so many deep conversations. And again, in adult minds, it's rude to talk about race and racism. Mm-hmm. Like, don't do that. But me being Black, like I'm used to talking about these things every day is just a part of life for me. You know, I don't get to ignore that. Just with everything that was happening over the summer and like being in this book, it like gave me an appreciation for just my colleagues. You know, people, I'm like, wow, I never knew you were an ally. And then let's talk about being an ally. And how can we further that where you become a co-conspirator to push like my work forward? Yeah, things like that. So, I mean, it's definitely still a challenge, but I think, I still focus on like anti-bias, anti-racism education, but also 2020 is bringing this, okay, we need to spend some time talking about social emotional well-being of our community and our students. So it's just kind of different.
It almost sounds like the preparation work or kind of like that hard, messy work that you were doing in 2019 prepared you for almost the elevated needs of your community in 2020.
Yes, definitely. Definitely.
Yeah. Like the way my, some of my former students would say is like, you had to go gain some levels first, right? You had to level grind and then come back and face the boss because, oh my goodness. In addition to, you said, you kind of touched on this, like the mindfulness role. You're saying that there's been even more of a focus on that this year because of the added strains.
Yes. Yeah. Mindfulness, like if I were to give you like the textbook definition, you know, they say that it's this awareness that arises through like paying attention or paying attention on purpose or just being in the present moment without judgment.
Now, how would you describe that to a kindergartner? Right. So like, right, you gave the textbook definition, but you're working with babies. So what does that mean?
Yeah. So I always just say mindfulness is simply being present. If you're angry, notice what is happening to your body. Are your shoulders like way up by your ears? Is your breathing getting faster? Do you notice yourself getting hot? Like all those kind of things. And there we have like three mindfulness teachers here. And so we all, you know, have different grades, but we use books. We do like mindful eating. We kind of cover like mindfulness in so many ways so that the kids can understand.
So mindful eating, that's like, I'm not going to eat this entire can of Pringles because I'm going to actually taste one before I put the next five in my mouth. Is that right?
Yes. And that, I would say that is like school-wide, probably the favorite lesson.
Of course.
In mindfulness, because we actually bring like a snack in.
What is the snack?
Sometimes it's chocolate. Sometimes it's a raisin, or it may be an apple. And it's like, let's think about the mindful eating on a global level. Where do you think these apples came from? You just see like this anticipation, like building in kids, like, I just want to eat it because that's what they're used to. But to just like slow down and really like appreciate this apple or this piece of chocolate, you know, like, okay, how does this taste in my mouth? Is it sour? Is it sweet? You know, things like that.
I don't know if I could like slow down and really contemplate the experience of eating chocolate as a child. Like I'm pretty sure if I had been in that classroom and you put it in front of me, I'd have been like, I don't know where it went. I'm sorry. Are we doing a lesson right now? I apologize.
Right. I always have to tell them you only get one. So but they love it.
That's awesome. I have one more question for you as it relates to like little guys and mindfulness. Mm-hmm. What are the signs, I guess, that we can look for as the adults and educators in little people's lives of them experiencing stress, especially at any time, but 2020 especially? And then how do you address it?
So I have a kindergartner and what I...
Oh, me too.
Yeah. So what I've been noticing is, especially like during this pandemic, how stress shows up in her is like her just like flipping out over the smallest thing. I'm like, wow, like this is kind of odd. Or even being disengaged, things like that. Like stress can show up so many different ways for people and even, you know, our little people. Those are just like a couple things I would look for. In kids, I always try to say like, hey, I love this thing called shark breath. So I always have my daughter do that. And you just make a shark fin with your hand and then place it on your forehead, close your eyes, and then just take a deep breath really slow as you bring your hand all the way down to your chest. So I'm kind of just like always trying to get her to slow down and like name the feeling, you know, like, why is your face scrunched up? Again, like noticing what is your body doing in this moment?
I as you were talking, I tried shark breath. It's kind of like, of course I did. It's kind of like sun salutation in yoga, right? It's just like bringing that down and in kind of movement.
Yeah, definitely. Or I'll tell her, because I think it's always so like important to stop all the time and just like connect with yourself because we're... Mm-hmm. Always used to like going and going and going. And so sometimes I just have her say like, okay, we're going to pause. Take your hand, place it over your heart. Take the other hand, place it on your belly and just close your eyes and breathe and like notice the rise and fall of your chest and stomach. And sometimes something that simple does the trick. And she can like go back to whatever she was doing.
That's awesome. Well, this has been a wide-ranging conversation, but a really, really fruitful one. Is there anything else you'd like to add?
Yeah, I would say since we ended on mindfulness, I know there are a lot of people who are interested. It seems like the hot thing to do right now. And I always get asked, like, how do you teach this to kids? Like, do they understand it? Things like that. Or I want to bring this to my school. If I could like give advice about that, I would say that it's always really great when you experience something for yourself. If you committed one month to practicing mindfulness in an area that you want to see improvement, it can be stress or anger or gratitude or even sleep. Just like choose one area of your life where you want to see improvement. Just like journal what that experience is like. And I'm sure like people around you, especially you tell them about your experience. And if they know you well, they'll be like, wait a minute, something is different. Like, this is really working for you. I feel like you can get more buy-in because especially in schools, when you have mindfulness or introduce anything new, teachers are like, we don't have time. But I'm like, mindfulness gives you more time because you can just stop. It can be 30 seconds of like a shark breath, maybe do it on both hands. And then you get back to teaching or whatever, when you might spend, let's say, 5 minutes trying to get the class to quiet down. Why not use mindfulness?
That was incredible because you gave advice for kids, grown people, teachers, school administrators, all within the span of about what, a minute and a half? So it's very obvious why you have the job that you do and why you are continuing to be one of the most important curriculum writers for Crossing Del Mar. So thank you so much for your time. This has been incredible.
All right. Thank you.
You're so welcome. I'll let you get back to your babies.
Yeah, okay. Bye.
Bye-bye.
Learn more about YWSTL at www.yourwordsstl.org. You can check us out on social media on Twitter, Instagram, Facebook, and LinkedIn at yourwordsstl. Our intro sounds are by Joey Ferber, and these outro sounds are by Asia Berlin. Bye-bye.